This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond.
And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
Today's show is all about bread. Our guest is Avery Ruzica from Manresa Bread, where she is the baker and partner. Despite the rise of everything gluten-free, we are very much living in a golden age of bread. Thanks to the foundation laid years ago by people like Jim Sullivan and Nancy Silverton, you can get very good bread today in every major city and beyond. And now you can get great bread in Los Gatos, thanks to Avery and her crew. Manresa Bread opened in 2015 as the bakery offshoot of Manresa, Chef David Kinch's highly regarded restaurant. The bakery also has a presence at several farmers markets in the area in Palo Alto and Campbell. I learned the hard way that if you don't get to the farmers market early, you are out of luck because they just might be out of bread. We're very fortunate to have Avery here today, all the way from California, on this bitterly cold Brooklyn day, apologies, Avery, to talk about bread, baking, her career, and West Coast life. Avery, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So apologies about the weather.
We wouldn't think if it was rainy and gloomy, but it's pretty beautiful. It's pretty refreshing.
That's true. Bitter, yeah. Cold, and blue skies.
Yes, sunny.
And so you used to live here. So.
I did. I am well prepared. Yeah, it's not a shock to the system.
I forgot about that part. But we are sitting in the studio in our coats.
We are. I'm not taking it off.
And our scarves.
And the tent behind us is blowing against our shipping container recording studio.
Yes. And you got to see, did you see the snow outside?
Yeah. It's pretty heavy still on some of the, cars actually, though.
Right?
I stay up in Harlem when I'm here, and a lot of the cars are still totally covered in snow.
So yeah. That is our gift to you. Snow.
Thank you guys.
This is the first snow of the year.
Just in time.
So let's start with your teenage years. It doesn't seem like you were a typical teenager. You spent a lot of time studying abroad, right?
I did. My parents are both actually from the north. They're from Chicago and Connecticut, and then they moved to North Carolina before I was born. But because of kind of my mom's background in Chicago, she just felt like it was really important that growing up, we didn't kind of think that this small kind of very insular world that we were living in North Carolina was the whole world. And so she and my father both really pushed us to get out into the world. And there was opportunity to study abroad in high school. So I went to Spain for a year, which was really amazing and really eye-opening, and kind of started my love of food. And then after that, I went to boarding school for 2 years. And then I went through the boarding school to England for a year. So I got a chance to really travel a lot and spend a lot of time abroad as a kid. And then in college as well, I ended up going to France for a couple of years. And all of those things together are, I think, really built first a love of food. And then in France, I got an opportunity to spend time in a couple different Michelin-starred restaurants and introduced me to a very high level of cuisine. And that kind of, for me, was what's ultimately, you know, and has brought me to this point of being the offshoot of a 3 Michelin star restaurant, which is pretty exciting.
I can't imagine the food in boarding school in England is that great.
I was in a school that was not a boarding school. And so it actually is when I started to cook the most because I had, it was kind of a postgraduate year and I didn't have too many classes, so I had a lot of free time, and it was very cold and very rainy there. It's in the north of England, so I spent a lot of time cooking. They had this great—I don't know if you guys are familiar with Aga stoves. They had an Aga stove. I was staying in this really charming little house with this family, and they had this amazing Aga stove, which are radiant heat stoves. They circulate oil, and so they're a big source of warmth in the kitchen, but also a lot of fun and an interesting way to cook because you don't set the oven. You don't, everything is at a certain heat. Yeah. So
kind of like early sous vide.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was it hard to relate to American students when you came back to the States and went to college?
The big difference was having gone to boarding school really felt like college. And then I went to a big university, I went to Chapel Hill, and it just was very kind of like, it felt sort of repetitive, not in a negative way, but just in a, like, I was ready and excited to go maybe do something else, which was why I ended up, you know, going to France for a couple of years, because boarding school had been so intense and kind of gave you that feeling of the college life. You're so focused on, all of your classes. It was very kind of somewhat competitive. It was great. It was awesome. But when I got to college, I was kind of ready for the next thing rather than being super excited about just school. And my parents were, my dad being an academic, they were really supportive of like finding a job you love. Both of them really love their jobs, and that was really great. So they didn't really put any pressure on college being what would ultimately define my career. You know, it was like, take classes. I took great classes. I have a double major. Like, it was great, but it wasn't, it didn't feel like it was going, it had to be what led to what I would ultimately do. It was meant to just be like a time to learn a lot of things, which it was. So it was great.
What did you double major in?
Political science and then international studies. And then I had a minor in creative writing. I wanted to be a writer. That's what I thought I was going to go off and do. And I wanted to be a food writer. Which is why when I got back from France and was finishing college, I got a job in my first job in a kitchen, because I thought, well, if I'm going to write about food, I should know what it's like to be in a real kitchen, at least for a little while. And then I started cooking in a small fine dining restaurant in Greensboro, which is where my family lives, and fell in love. And like, I just didn't want to stay there all day. And so I finished college, and that's when I decided I would move up to New York to go to culinary school. Yeah.
So how did you wind up at a French Culinary Institute?
Well, because of having gone to college already, I felt like I didn't want to necessarily do like a two-year program like the CIA. I wanted to get a little bit of a foundation, have an opportunity to meet some people, which I feel like the FCI does a really great job of. But I wanted to get out there and work. I didn't want to spend two more years kind of getting, I think that's really great if people are looking for a school experience, but I was definitely looking for just kind of a little bit of a confidence booster and just kind of a check on what my skill set was and where I was starting with. And I actually met David at the culinary school. So
go back to what you said, a confidence booster. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I think that, you know, I've been cooking in with my family for a long time. I've been cooking in a kitchen at that point for a year, but you know, it's a big, in your head, it's a big difference to go from a small, you know, town to the city. And I really wanted to be in fine dining restaurants. I really wanted to be in kind of, I said when I was moving to New York, I said I wanted to be like a kitchen monk. I wanted to just go from my kitchen to my house and just have that be my whole life and really focus on it. And that's what the couple of years that I was in New York were really like. But there was definitely a little bit of a, you know, like an intimidation factor to a certain sense. I hadn't been doing, some people start cooking very young. I didn't start to work in kitchens professionally until I was in my early 20s. So, you know, you get a little nervous and really, I think the thing I learned, and that one of the reasons I really love David is, the attitude I feel like with which you approach cooking is the most important thing. If you want to learn, you can learn. And David has always sort of, I love that David's really passionate still and super curious still. And that's the tone that it's set in the Manresa kitchen. That's what I loved about it. And I feel like that's really unique because some people, Manresa's been around for almost 15 years now. And that's a long time to have one restaurant. And that what makes that really great is that he's still as fired up, as excited, and it's constantly changing, which I think is something that makes that restaurant really unique too, because a lot of restaurants kind of figure out their formula and it could be a great formula, but they're not necessarily constantly innovating or looking for new things. And David
right.
is.
And to have the chef still there after 15 years.
Yeah. And in the kitchen every day. Yeah.
Yeah. I've only eaten there once, but we ate at the bar and he was there, yeah. Came over, chatted with us. It was really nice.
I mean, he loves that place. And especially with the fire happening for all of us, it was really, I mean, it was awful that that happened, but for everyone got to take 6 months to kind of reflect. And it felt great to come back because everybody kind of came back realizing how important this place and their, like, their focus and their passion was. Like, it kind of was like a moment to pause and say, are you really loving what you're doing? And everybody, you know, the entire group of people that was there before the fire all came back. And I think that says a lot.
So Avery is referring to a terrible event in the history of Manresa. There was a fire about a year and a half ago now. How long ago?
Yeah, it was July, almost 2 years.
So there was a terrible fire. It happened early in the morning.
Yeah, no one was hurt. We were really lucky.
No one was there. A lot of damage to the building, though. If you are a fan of that TV show, Mind of a Chef, and the very David and Gabrielle Hamilton are the stars of the new season. And the first episode is really moving. David talks about the fire and what it meant to him and his life and where he was when he found out. And it's amazing that you were able to rebuild and that the team stayed intact.
Yeah, it definitely just kind of says exactly that. Everybody loved this place and loved what we were doing and was so excited to come back. And, you know, 6 months, it's a long time, but it's also felt like a long time while it was happening. But when looking back, 6 months to rebuild a kitchen is not that long. So everybody was just so excited to get back in there.
All right. So we passed over a whole big chunk of your history.
Okay.
So we have to go back. So back to culinary school.
Okay.
So you must have been a good student, or at least a promising student, because you wound up at Per Se after graduation.
I did. I did two programs at the French Culinary Institute. I did their culinary program, and then right after that, I did their bread program. And we baked at home. My parents both really love to cook. They both bake a little bit, not in any big way at the time. After culinary school, my father started really baking a lot. And now I go home and he has more starters in the refrigerator than I do. It's actually kind of amazing. And he'll call me about various bread projects along the way, which is a lot of fun. But I knew that bread really resonated with me. I wasn't sure if that was, you know, if it, like I was ready to, I know, go straight into a bakery. I really wanted to be in a fine dining restaurant. And so the opportunity to be at Per Se, I staged at Per Se for a couple of months, and that was my time there, but it was all within the bread team, which was kind of the dream for me, a fine dining environment with its own bread program. And it was amazing. Both of my culinary instructors at the French Culinary Institute for the bread program had both worked either at Per Se or French Laundry. And so they both felt like they could tell me a little bit about the intensity, et cetera, which was what I was looking for. I wanted to be in a place where it was very focused, very driven, very creative. And the opportunity to spend time there definitely was really eye-opening, and I feel like it really kind of set the total foundation for me of my bread baking career, because it was that time I spent there coupled with the culinary school program, which was only a couple months, that when I moved to California to work at Manresa was sort of the foundation upon which I used to start a bread program at the restaurant. So I feel like, you know, if my teachers, and my teachers by that I mean my bosses at in the bread program at Per Se and Bouchon, really, you know, just did everything exactly the right way. And we're really curious and explained so much that I feel like in the small amount of time that I spent there, they just taught me how to look at and think about bread. And then that was, you know, when I was by myself then many, you know, a year later in California, trying to figure things out in a restaurant kitchen with no baking equipment, with no one to talk to, with no one to kind of bounce ideas or problem solve with. They had given me enough that I could do that, which was, I feel really lucky and thankful for. Yeah.
You referred earlier to wanting to be a kitchen monk,
mm-hmm.
and the Per Se kitchen seems like the perfect place to be the kitchen monk.
It definitely was. I've
toured it a few times during service, and I can't believe how quiet, how clean. I mean, they don't even play music, right?
No, they don't. They don't. No, there's none of that. It's very clear when you walk in the door that, you know, you're there to do your job, to learn, but there's the whole focus is definitely what's in front of you, whether it's a knife in your hand or the bread that you're mixing. That's needs to be your sole focus, which is a good way to be.
What's the kitchen like at Manresa then?
It was funny when I got to Manresa, David said to me, you know, Avery, we all smile here. and people smile, of course, at Per Se, but David sets the tone. Manresa is, if anything, a total expression of David Kinch. And so there is all sorts of moods. There is a lot of intensity as well, a lot of passion, a lot of question asking, high expectations, but there is a playfulness, a sense of humor, the reality of there being a little bit of life outside of work, that everyone who comes to work comes there because they're incredibly excited to do what they're going to do that day, but that they have something going on that's valuable outside of work. And that's really important for people. And I think and is not something I got at first.
And I think that's just a California thing. No?
Yeah.
We have no lives in New York except for work.
Well, not every restaurant gives you 2 days off, and it's really important. And Manresa gives you 2 consecutive days off, so people are actually able to have a real weekend, which it's on a Monday, Tuesday. It's a different weekend than everybody else, but it's a set schedule. And I think that that helps you create a really livable life and a manageable, balanced life, or gives you some sort of core to build from. And that's, again, you know, something that David decided, because David has he has a ton of things he likes to do. And California is true, though, that is a very California way of looking at life. And I think that's why Manresa is in California rather than New York City.
So how did David lure you to the West Coast?
We had met, like I said, with the school. He was in town to do an event, the Omnivore event. I'm not sure if they still do it, but the Omnivore is the French food magazine, and they host a couple of big food festivals in France every year. And then they used to do one on a yearly basis in New York. So he was there working in the Manresa, working in the same kitchen that was my classroom. And so we had met, and I kind of helped them out with some things they needed and, getting oriented around the school. And David said, if you're ever on your way to California, you should, let us know. We'd love to have you. And it was a very casual, totally, like, he was just being a nice guy. And I was like, all right.
Avery packed her suitcase and was on the next plane.
Yeah. So we had bounced emails back and forth, because I saw him I helped him out again when he was in New York for, when he won a James Beard Award. And so they did a series of pop-ups in Chelsea Market for that. And I said, I would really love, I finished the spread program. I went and helped a friend open a restaurant here in New York. I was trying to figure out what was going to be next for me. And this was 2 years after, a year and a half after meeting David for the first time. And I kept coming back to the idea of Manresa. Something about it just seemed really right for me. And I said, I'd love to come out there. And it was May. And he said, well, we won't have any positions for sure until maybe the fall, if then. And I kind of bounced, okay, well, what am I going to do? And I went back to North Carolina I was living here still. And I went back to North Carolina to see my family. We went to a mountain house for a week. And while we were in the mountains, a friend of mine texted me and said, Manresa is hiring in the front of the house right now. And I did actually then pack my bag and we cut our vacation short, and I flew out to California from North Carolina, to interview. So again, I might be a little crazy sometimes, but it just seemed like, okay, this is the moment, I have to go. And I got a position as a food runner.
I'm going to stop you right there, because I think that's a good cliffhanger for us to take a station break.
Okay, great.
Right now. So we'll be back in just a minute, and we're going to find out how Avery went from front of house runner to bread rock star.
There we go.
Come on, look.
Welcome back to the second half of Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with Avery Ruzica from Manresa Bread. And before the break, she was talking about having finally gotten a job at Manresa as a kitchen runner. For those of us who don't know what that is, Avery, can you tell us a little bit about that job?
Yes. So in fine dining restaurants, you know, you usually have a tasting menu typically, which means that you're not kind of ordering one dish or making a selection of your food. It's decided for you. And so because of that, the way that the food is kind of like organized from getting from the kitchen to the restaurant table takes a lot of people. There's a lot of choreography. And so a food runner's job literally is to walk, not run, but to the table, give the diner, you know, set the diner down. And at the time when I was working, we did it in a very choreographed way that we both would set down the plates at the same time. That was very important. Each runner only takes one plate. They don't take more than one. And we would explain the dish to the diner. So that was kind of, we did interact with the diner throughout the whole night. So they would have a waiter, but then we were a part of that. So you basically are in the kitchen waiting and helping and wiping down plates to make sure everything is perfect and ready, and then taking the food and explaining it. So that was my job.
And how long did you work as a runner before you finally made it to the back of house?
It kind of happened at the same time. I made a commitment of 6 months. I would not try to, because they knew that I wanted to be in the kitchen. So I had to agree with the GM that I would stay in that position for 6 months. But it gave me free mornings. And I asked the about-to-be chef de cuisine at the time, Jessica, if I could come in and stage in the morning because I had my mornings free. And she said, this is one of those kind of me jumping the gun a little bit. She said, sure, yeah, of course. So I showed up the next day and nobody in the morning and none of the kitchen staff arrives except for the like stagers or the interns early in the morning. The actual line cooks come at like 12. So I'm there with the intern, the other stages, and I saw that they were doing the bread, and they at that time we were making the bread in-house, but it was being made by the pastry team. In this case, it was being made by a stage, and they definitely didn't have any, you know, they were in culinary school, they had not done anything with bread, so they were doing fine, but they weren't excited about it. And I thought, well, here I am, I have my mornings free, I think this bread could use some tweaking, you know. And I asked David if it would be all right if I started to help out with the bread, and they were like, sure, you know, you could do it. And David slowly, you know, first it was just me helping them mix or taking over the mixes, kind of giving them some more guidance about what was going on. Then I became the one fully responsible for it. Then David had enough confidence in me that I said, hey, I think that I'd like to tweak a little bit, like at the time what we called our Manresa Levain, which we still use a similar recipe, but I tweaked it a lot because it just wasn't happy enough. The sourdough starter wasn't active enough. It was just,
but
it needed.
You said it wasn't happy enough?
It wasn't happy.
It's a living thing.
Explain that.
It wasn't
bread
happy.
Bread is alive.
Bread is alive. And I mean, we were definitely baking with, it was a can-do attitude more than anything, which we were using a normal oven. There was no steam. There's no, so you're trying, you know, you're trying to create the perfect environment for the bread when it bakes. But if you don't do the same thing when you're making the bread, the best possible version you're going to get out of any oven is not going to be that great. So things like when you feed the starter, what temperature you feed the starter with, where you keep it, all of those things were at the time not necessarily, I liken it to a game of telephone where I think it started out totally great, and then too many people have been kind of given the task that what they were doing didn't really make sense, and nobody knew that that didn't make sense. And so I got a chance to kind of, it was my first big like bakery problem solving exercise, because there was no instructor, there wasn't a recipe that was necessarily working that great. And so I kind of really had to use the skill set that school and then my time at Per Se had given me to kind of be like, what can I do, you know? And slowly with time, there were some mistakes. There were a couple of days where David said, Avery, I think the bread might be a little flat. And I was like, I know, I'm so sorry, you know. But that was just a pretty small time. And then it ended up, you know, a couple months later being just so much better. And then with more time, David gave me the opportunity then to add some new breads to the menu, take some things off, put my own recipes on, the Levain continuing to be on there. Then we got new ovens, not still not bread oven, not a deck oven. Obviously, Manresa is a small restaurant for people who have not been there. The kitchen is pretty tiny.
The kitchen's, I was surprised how small the kitchen is for how many people are back there.
It is, yeah. People are definitely working comfortably next to one another. And we replaced our convection ovens with a Rationale oven, so that a Rationale has steam heat and convection heat. And so you're able to program a certain amount of moisture into the oven. And so we started, that kind of was the next like level of experimentation. And so about 6 months, so I'd made my 6 month commitment, finished up as a food runner, moved into the kitchen, and was splitting my time between the bread in the morning and then the Amuse station in the evening. So I would come in at 9 and I would stay till the last turn, which is 9 p.m. at the last seating at the restaurant. And I did that for 6 months. And then after 6 months, they said, would you like to, you know, do you want to focus on one thing or the other? And I finally felt ready to realize, like, to kind of take that step where it was like, you know what, I imagined somebody else coming to work every day and watching somebody else making the bread, and it kind of broke my heart. And I said, I think I have my answer finally. I think this is, I love being a fine dining restaurant, but I think that being a bread baker is actually what I should be doing. Yeah.
That's such a testament to you, though, that there was no bread program and that you came in, and because it was a passion of yours,
yeah,
just I did mean, it on your own time, and it's grown into this thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, like David has... David has so much passion. Manresa is all about passion. You're in this environment where you're surrounded by people who you want to aspire to be, like the line cooks that are there at the time, and the that knowledge and the skill set. And I loved all of that, but I felt like the bread just really resonated with me. And so I'm so lucky that I got the opportunity to do that. You know, I mean, I was definitely really like excited and fired up and wanted to see what I could. I wanted to show myself what I could do, you know, and prove to myself that I could build something. And I just was really lucky that that place that I got to build it was at Manresa. And yeah,
I feel like San Francisco and that area has such a really rich bread community.
It really does. San Francisco especially. We are a little outside of San Francisco in terms of the bread opportunities, the bakeries that exist, which is great for us because we have an opportunity to kind of provide a product that otherwise people are traveling to the city to get. And there definitely is a hunger for that where we are. Los Gatos is a small town, but it is a very like well-traveled town. There's a big population of like French and German people. And so there is already was a lot of like love for this product that existed that we were able to suddenly tap into, which was great. Yeah.
Is there anything that sets Manresa's bread apart from other places?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think the way that we tried to start the bakery in terms of what our kind of core foundation or ideas are, ethos is based around the restaurant, which is a focus on technique and a focus on like the best quality ingredients, which is what Manresa does, and then a real passion for what we do. And so that means that you're always learning, and that's been the exciting part of the bakery. And what I think sets us apart is we don't just have a roster of breads that these are great breads, we know they're great breads, done, this is what we're gonna do forever and ever. You know, we have a handful of breads that are always on the menu, such as the Levain, but our Levain is always evolving. You know, when I think about what it was like at Manresa restaurant when I first started, or after 3 or 4 months of me working on it, and what it is now, it's totally different. We source our flours differently. We have our own mill, so we mill a lot of our flours. We mill all of our wheat and all of our rye, and then we purchase our bread flour, which is a higher protein white flour. It's an organic product, unbleached. But everything else we're milling ourselves. So that's been a new and exciting challenge to learn about milling and what fresh milled flours act like and how different they can be. And so I think what sets us apart is on a fundamental level is just how excited we are. So there's going to always be innovation. There's always going to be changes. There's always going to be tweaking. And then from just for the customer, I think it's exciting because they are getting a product that so much like love and care has gone into, and I think that you can taste that. Like, it's evident with our, you know, wheat, that like this is our whole wheat bread that we, you know, we milled everything. Everything has a long fermentation time. All of our breads are sourdough. So our Levain, it retards for 2 days before we bake it. So that slow, cold fermentation really develops the flavor. And then the rest of our breads are all overnight. So none of our breads are made and baked the same day, which, again, is you're going to taste a big difference. Yeah.
So you were saying Levain is sourdough in French, essentially.
Yes.
But it's not typical San Francisco sourdough.
It's not.
Explain the difference.
So historically, San Francisco sourdough is, and I think it's known, you know, the country over, if you say a San Francisco sour, you mean it's a super, super sour. And it's because of the yeast that is in San Francisco, but it's also because of the process of fermentation and what they, you know, were trying to make. It's you can make a sourdough in San Francisco and not have it be super sour. And what sets ours apart and why we call it a Levain and use a French word is because we think that our sourdoughs are a bit more of a traditional sort of French approach to sourdough, which is a bit more balance between the sweeter flavors and the more sour flavors. Yeah.
I was reading about your chocolate brioche.
Yeah.
Last night. Oh my God, it sounded unbelievable.
It is really good. That was one of our, the next thing when I was at the restaurant that I got to take over was what we call our take homes. We send every guest home with something. And so the pastry team used to make cookies. And then I said, well, could we, you know, I could make a brioche instead. And then we ended up making the chocolate brioche. And yeah, it's nice because it's chocolatey and it's rich, but it's not super sweet. There's very little sugar in it. So it's a nice balance between the bread flavor and the chocolate flavor rather than just being a lot of sugar.
And there are chips in it?
There are chocolate chunks in there.
Whose chocolate do you use?
We use Valrhona. And then we use Valrhona's cocoa powder too. Yeah.
And then I read you put something on the top called pearl sugar.
We do.
I had never heard of that
so
before.
So it's pearl sugar is a compressed sugar so that when you bake it, it doesn't melt. So if you top something with like a normal sugar or a demerara sugar, it will sort of melt, or demerara will keep its shape a little bit, but it, for depending on the length of time of baking it. And this pearl sugar, it's white, and they're little, kind of like little pellets, more than they are pearls. They're not perfectly round or anything like that, but it's used a lot in like Scandinavian baking for topping a lot of pastries. And you also see it on top of like things like panettone. Yeah. So we put that on because it's, again, it's actually the biggest, sweetest part of it because there's not very much sugar in the dough. So that little bit of sugar on top is nice. Yeah.
What are some of the other either best-selling breads or signature breads?
Yeah, the Levain is super popular. The baguettes, so that was really exciting. At the restaurant before we had the bakery, we made mini baguettes because we could make tiny little baguettes for bread service that were great because you want an ear on a baguette, which is what we call the kind of where you score the bread and where the bread kind of opens in the baking to release some of the gases and help with the expansion. But it's impossible to get a great ear on a little baguette or on a big baguette in a deck oven. And it's very difficult. But we could get one on a small little baby baguette. So when we finally had the bakery and we were able to make baguettes, it was very exciting. So they are a big seller. We actually kind of can't keep up. I don't have a very big team. We have much bigger than it was when it was just me, but we have 4 people on our bread team and 5 on our pastry team. And that's not that big for the amount of production we do. So on a Sunday when we have both markets and the retail shop, we make about 300 baguettes, and that's one person who shapes and bakes all those baguettes. So that's pretty much all she does in her morning. So in order for us to make, and we could probably sell, I think we could sell another 200 baguettes on a Sunday, but we just at this point are still can't quite make that, which is okay. But we're problem solving with that right now, trying to figure out, you know, is it another person? What do we, you know, do we all the same kind of like, they're good problems to have, but that's definitely where we are right now.
And you're sometimes at the farm stand, right?
I used to be there every single Sunday. So what after being a food runner, after doing the bread and the Amuse program or working in both those stations, I ultimately ended up just making bread and then was like, well, what else could we do with the bread? And that was when I had the opportunity to join the farmers market. And so I would make all the bread on Saturday night and then pack it all up. And we used to use David's car or Jessica, who was the chef de cuisine at the time. We'd pack it all in their cars and we would drive it to the farmers market and sell it all. Yeah. Yeah, they were.
It must be a luxury then to have. You have a commissary now, you said.
I do. I have a commissary and I have vans. So
so fancy.
Yeah, it is. It is a luxury. And we, so again, Manresa's kitchen is small. And I think by the time we were, right before the fire happened, we were really sort of at capacity on Saturday nights. The walk-in at Manresa would have all of its normal things. There might be some lambs, whole lambs hanging in there. And then there'd be multiple like racks with all my bread waiting to be baked. And so people could had to like squeeze in or pull all the bread out to get whatever they needed. So when we moved into our space, it's we have 3,400 square feet, which is big. We actually have an entire room that we're about to start, because we kind of left as a blank space and use it for packaging, and we're actually about to start construction on that. And I want to move where we make our bread into the front room, which is this empty room, and leave all of our equipment where it is, but have that backspace be just baking and packaging. And that's, those are the kind of things that 1 year in, we're sort of understanding how to make things flow and what we can do to, you know, just use the great space we have, but even use it more efficiently. 3,400 square feet is big, but all of a sudden, you know, you're like starting scratching your head about how to grow and how to use it the best way. Yeah.
Do you guys have plans to wholesale, or are you just going to keep it to the retail and restaurant?
So we do wholesale with our pastry. We supply all of the pastries for a coffee company called Verve, and they're based out of Santa Cruz too, which is where I live in Santa Cruz. Most of us live in Santa Cruz, and they're a pretty young business. They just expanded to LA. We don't do the pastries for them in LA, but they are going to be opening in San Francisco as well. So we do their pastries, and then we do pastries for a small coffee shop called Chromatic, which just has one location, but both of these coffee shops are roasters, as you know, and so they both make really great coffee. That's the majority, like that's kind of the extent of wholesale that we want to do. Everything else, yeah, is retail. And we don't really do much, we don't really do wholesale bread, but we do supply Manresa. And then my business partners David and Andrew just opened the Bywater, which is their New Orleans restaurant. David's from New Orleans, so we do the bread for that. So that has been an interesting learning curve, because long, slow fermented sourdoughs are very different than what the kind of bread you need to make for po' boys. And so we definitely had to make a lot of kind of failed attempts along the way to get the po' boy bread right, which is a quick and straightforward mix. Yeah.
So before we go to the speed round, I thought we'd get some advice from Avery for the home baker.
Okay.
So do you still bake bread at home?
I do a little bit. I make most of it with my dad, though. So when I'm home, we'll bake together, because he bakes everything out of our kitchen. So I don't do it as much as I used to, but I definitely do know a lot of tricks for it.
So if you want to start, let's say you have never baked bread at home before.
Yeah.
What are some tools you need? What are some tricks people should know?
Yeah. I would recommend this book called Flour, Water, Salt, Yeast, because it gives you sourdough information, but it also gives you a couple other kinds of breads to make. And sourdoughs are really great, but they're time consuming and they can be a little frustrating. And I think it's good to have a couple other recipes that might boost your confidence along the way and say, okay, this seems sort of similar, because the foundations and what's happening in bread are usually the same. So I would get that book. I would just recommend that book to start. But you want to get a big bowl for mixing. And honestly, it can be like a plastic. It can be something that's easy to clean. So because bread making is pretty messy. And I think that the trick of baking it in a Dutch oven or is really the best way. You get the best steam and the best crust without having to struggle with pouring water into a hot pot in the midway through baking and things like that, which can get a little, can get like just kind of hard to do. And the Dutch oven, you basically just score your bread and pop it into a very hot Dutch oven, put the lid back on, and that really does give you a similar quality of bread to what you would get out of a deck oven, only you can only make one loaf at a time.
I just realized I called Jim Sullivan.
Earlier. Sullivan Street.
But that's, Jim's recipe, right?
He has
right?
a really famous no-knead bread, which is the easiest bread that I've ever made, and it's delicious. And I actually never put it in a Dutch oven. I would actually just put it in a loaf pan so I could make sandwiches
with
it.
Yeah.
And it worked fine, too.
Yeah.
I would, like, throw some water in the beginning so try and make it steam, but...
Yeah. No, you know. I mean... Spray bottles actually work pretty well. Yeah, but I think for the for somebody if their goal is to have a crusty style bread, then the Dutch oven trick really does work.
Yeah. But I do think that that overnight, the long fermentation really does help, because I've also made it with just conventional yeast and had it rise for 2 hours, and the taste is
it's totally different.
Yeah, it's totally different.
Yeah.
All right, so I think it's time for the speed round. We've got 2 minutes left with Avery.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
How do you take it?
Black.
What's in your refrigerator right now?
A lot of pickles.
Favorite foods?
Cheese, pickles. I think things that go well with bread.
Is there anything you absolutely will not eat?
No.
What foods are you craving right now?
Well, we're at Roberta's, so pizza would actually be great. I think.
Favorite drink?
A sidecar.
What's your favorite kitchen tool?
A bench scraper, which is it's a pastry tool. It's what we use to clean the table off.
What's next for you in life? What's your dream project?
I definitely want to open another bakery. We bake our bread out of a commissary space, which makes a lot of sense. I'd love to find myself 10 years along with my own little tiny bakery where it potentially is wood fired. It's in my house. You know, it's just really just kind of everything's right there with no responsibility to make any money.
That is a dream.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go to next?
I would love to go back to France. I would really love to go back to some bakeries. In a small village kind of bakery. That's kind of what we model ourselves off of. And I had an experience once where I got to bake with someone in the middle of the night when I didn't even think I was going to be a baker. And I'd love to go back now and do that again with the mindset of this is my life. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being with us today, Avery, and congratulations on all your success. Hopefully we'll be out there soon and we'll come visit you.
We'd love to see you out there. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
And that's it for today's Radio Cherry Bomb. Bye everybody. Everyone.
Hi, this is Diana Yen. I'm the owner of Jewels of New York, a food styling and consulting studio. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint product of Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. For more information on the magazine or to subscribe, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Yasia Refi. Her Instagram is full of delicious baked goods I love looking at every day.